Hello and welcome to Shattered Lives, Reach Ireland's crime podcast. I'm Paul Healy and I am crime correspondent for the Irish Daily Star and the Irish Mirror newspapers. And I'm joined by Michael O'Toole. He is our crime and defence editor. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Paul. How's things?
Good. This is our Week in Crime edition. There really is still only one major crime story in town. Thankfully, we're not talking about any serious incidents developing. We're talking about this story for all the right reasons, in that it seems the Garda investigation has moved on significantly, even in the last couple of days. Now, we need to be cautious. Obviously, sub judice, there are matters before the courts, but a number of people have been brought before the courts, and that shows that the Garda investigation into the deaths of Tristan Sherry and Jason Hennessy are significantly progressing. So on Tuesday, the funeral of Tristan Sherry finally took place. It's over 3 weeks, as we said in the previous pod, since Tristan Sherry was killed in Brown Steakhouse there in Blanchardstown, West Dublin. And he was the gunman, the hitman that came into the restaurant, opened fire and shot Jason Hennessy Sr. in the neck. And obviously Jason Hennessy Sr. died just over 2 weeks ago. And now Tristan Sherry has been buried.
Yeah, so you were at the funeral. We were talking about gangland funerals in last week's Week in Crime. So you were there. It was in Finglas at St. Canice's Church in Finglas on, it was Tuesday, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, I wasn't at the funeral. To be fair, kept my distance from the funeral service itself. We kept an eye on things, as we do in this industry, from a discreet distance, but I wasn't inside the church. I wasn't witness to the mass. That's something that's very much a family affair. But even just in witnessing what we saw, and certainly in the pictures afterwards, some of it was extraordinary. There was a number of floral tributes, but the one I think that really stood out was I think you probably saw it yourself, Mick, this balaclava, basically. And you have to think about this, that a florist actually had to make this tribute, which was a balaclava and a pair of gloves, and another one of a pair of pliers. Unusual tributes, to say the least, to anybody, but they were there front and centre at the funeral.
How many people would you have judged to have been at the funeral?
It was a smaller number than expected. I didn't count every number, but I would say roughly 50 or 60 people. I thought that's relatively a small number compared to some of these other gangland funerals. You know, you'll recall the funeral, a recent funeral that happened in the Finglas area, where there were hundreds of people and individuals out on bikes and the likes. Nothing like that happened. It was a very discreet affair, very quick. Everyone that went into that church was well covered up, and probably aware that they were probably being photographed. The other thing that was obviously noticeable, and it was great to see, was a very visible Garda presence. Saw the Garda armed support unit driving around, saw a Garda van, and saw various uniformed officers doing patrols around the church for the duration of the service.
I used to find, I don't do gangland funerals anymore, I think I've done enough, but I used to find the bigger the crowd, the easier it was not to stand out. And I remember doing Dutchie Holland's funeral. It was in near Coolock, Bonnybrook Church, I think it was. And I walked into the church, and the door creaked when I walked in, when I opened the door, and everybody turned around and looked at me, and Eamon Dunne was at it. And I got a message, I think I've spoken about this, I got a message about 15 minutes into it, said, Eamon Dunne is piking you out of it. So I genuflected and got out of Dodge. But
got out of there.
Well, there were only about 30 people, maybe 20, in the church. So there was another journalist there. You stood out like a sore thumb. And especially as I went in late. So it's like literally got all those scenes in Westerns where you walk into the saloon and everybody looks around. That was me. So it wasn't the best start to it. So yeah. But I think you're right. Look, sometimes we do go in and sometimes we don't. And I think you have to, you judge each one on its own. You do, we would call it a dynamic risk assessment or a dynamic assessment. how's this going to go? Because sometimes you can and sometimes you can't.
Yeah, on this occasion, I did not go in. As I said, look, it was a small enough affair. And there, I think it probably would have been a bigger funeral were it not for the threat level. There was clearly a threat that had been well flagged ahead of this funeral. And as you broke yourself, Mick, story last week, that there was a credible threat against a female, an innocent female associate of Tristan Sherry. So the threat remains real. It was obvious by the Garda presence, in a visible Garda presence, that there was a threat here, and that and they met it as best they could, and it went off without any incident. Thankfully, went off without any incident. Just want to briefly mention, obviously, this came out after the fact. Obviously, there were reporters in court, or this came out through some means anyway. There was a eulogy for Tristan Sherry. A friend got up and described him as a big chap with an even bigger heart, and the friend said that. He's more than a friend to me. You were family. We stood beside each other through everything, right or wrong, no matter what, and described him as a rallier, and went on to talk about his love for motorbikes. And that was evident when you saw the there were bike helmets being carried into the church, and other attire, which some of the floral tributes was a Lamborghini floral tribute as well, and also what seemed to be a roll-up cannabis floral tribute. Again, you have to imagine, some florists out there, I suppose they're getting paid no matter what, but can you imagine being asked to put that together? But anyway, look, each to their own. That's how
the customer's always right.
That's how they chose to remember their friend and family member.
But just moving on in relation to this, obviously a number of people a number of males are before the courts in relation to what happened to Mr. Sherry, so we're going to be careful about that. But there was a bail hearing for two men who are charged with the murder of Tristan Sherry. And that was, I think I was on Tuesday as well, from our Tuesday, Wednesday, Tuesday, I think.
It was yesterday.
Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, just to explain this process to people, you know, in a high court bail hearing, and you have to go to the high court if you're charged with an offence like murder to try and get bail. So there are two individuals, David Ama, he's from Hazel Grove, Port Rand Road, and Donabate, he's 18 years old, and Michael Andricutt, he's 22 years old, from Sheep Hill Avenue in Dublin 15. They are both charged with the murder of Tristan Sherry, and in order to apply for bail, they have to go to the high court. They can't just do so in an ordinary court. The other thing about a high court hearing is that we get details of what the prosecution's case is for the first time, and that's usually the state making its arguments for why the individuals who are on trial, they don't want them to get bail, and they make those arguments before the high court judge, and the judge then makes the assessment as to whether they give that person bail or keep them in custody. So Mr. Andricutt and Mr. Ama both appeared before Mr. Justice Tony Hunt. People may remember that name. He presided over the Special Criminal Court, a couple of the Special Criminal Court trials, and he also presided over the recent trial, the Aisling Murphy trial, that is the trial of Joseph Puska.
Yeah.
So Detective Sergeant Mark Murphy, he gave evidence before the court, and he agreed with the prosecution counsel that Tristan Sherry died from blunt force trauma to the head. That would be the first time that we would have gotten the official detail as to how Mr. Sherry died. So Tristan Sherry died of blunt force trauma to the head. That's his official cause of death from the post-mortem examination. We also heard that Mr. Sherry and Jason Hennessy Sr. fell to the ground, and that a firearm was dropped, and that it was ultimately picked up and removed from the Brown Steakhouse restaurant by another person, an unidentified person. We heard in the court hearing that Tristan Sherry was attacked by several people. He was kicked, beaten with chairs and iron bar in a sustained attack that lasted 5 minutes. And in relation to one of the accused, that's Mr. Andricutt, it is alleged that he struck Tristan Sherry 50 times in the incident. The court heard that that Mr. Sherry was stabbed, as I said, and at one point Mr. Andricutt is alleged to have walked away and then come back and struck Mr. Sherry in the head, and that this was actually filmed on a mobile phone, allegedly.
And I also think there was an allegation that he was stabbed with an iron bar, stabbed in the head or the face with an iron bar.
In the face with an iron bar, yes, and struck with chairs. Mr. Andercutt, the court heard, was asked in a Garda interview how he felt, and he said that he felt terrible, but he said that it was a natural instinct and fight or flight, and he said that what happened was a shock. But the Garda given evidence said that the video evidence that they have from this dismisses this rationale by Mr. Andercutt of fight or flight. Also, his passport, the accused's passport, was found in a bag on top of a dog cage in the kitchen of his home. And the guards have had expressed their fear that if Mr. Andercutt was granted bail, that he might abscond. His parents are Romanian. He's originally, his parents are from Romania, but he is Irish. And, you know, his family are from Dublin, working construction. So the court heard all of that. His own barrister, Aoife O'Leary, said that they would be raising the issue of self-defence. So from Mr. Andercutt's perspective, he is arguing that his actions were self-defence.
And just to interrupt you there, Paul, sorry. I think reading the evidence, I think there was evidence that he said he didn't know that the gun had been taken away.
Yes. Exactly. That is his allegation, that he didn't know the gun had been taken away. Then in relation to Mr. Amah, this is the other person, the 18-year-old individual, he actually is alleged to have committed this offence when he was underage, 17 years of age. So he has since turned 18. And the court heard that he repeatedly punched Tristan Cherry with an object, which is believed to be, he's believed to have been using a knife that could be seen in his hand. It's also alleged that he kicked and stamped on Tristan Cherry, and he appeared to take a video of this as he kicked him. He told Gardaí also that he didn't know that the firearm was gone, and he felt that Tristan Cherry was a threat. He claimed that he panicked, felt that his own life was in danger. But again, the Garda given evidence to the court said the gun had been removed, and alleged that Mr. Amah was aware of this, but continued to attack Tristan Cherry nonetheless. He told the court that Mr. Amah had a transient lifestyle, and that he was sitting with family and friends. That's basically the thrust of the evidence that was heard. And ultimately then the judge had to consider this. I understand that he looked at some of the footage, wasn't shown in court, and the Mr. Justice Hunt ultimately declined to give both men bail.
And I believe the reason that it wasn't shown in court is that there's an ongoing Garda investigation.
Yes.
Now, it was actually on Tuesday. I know the copy only came out on Wednesday, but the court case was on Tuesday because it was in Clover Hill, at the High Court in Clover Hill, and I was in the neighbouring or the adjacent court, which is the District Court, for another bail hearing, so I couldn't make that High Court hearing. But that actually did happen on Tuesday, but the copy was only released on the Wednesday. So I was in Clover Hill for the appearance, a bail hearing of brothers Eric O'Driscoll and Glenn Ward, who are charged with firearms offences. They're charged, Glenn Ward is charged with possessing an AR-15 military, what the court heard on Tuesday was a military grade rifle, and the recklessly discharging of a firearm. Eric O'Driscoll is charged with possessing the AR and an Ingram Mac machine pistol. He's also charged with possessing 320 rounds of assorted ammunition and three magazines for an Uzi 9mm. That's a machine pistol as well. So there was a contested bail hearing on Tuesday, and there were some details that came out about that. Now, the district court, essentially the heels of the hunt, both Judge Alan Mitchell refused bail for both men. Now, they had the right to go to the High Court. They'd been remanded for another fortnight, but there was some evidence that did come out, namely Gardaí said that the Detective Sergeant Niall Murray from Finglas Garda Station gave evidence to the effect that this firearm seizure was in Finglas in February 2022, okay? Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, next month, right? Now, the court heard Detective Sergeant Murray said in June of that year, so 5-6 months after that incident, there was an incident in a taxi on Talca Road in Finglas, where shots were fired at a taxi in which Mr. O'Driscoll and Mr. Ward were travelling. The evidence was that they both fled the scene, but Eric O'Driscoll left his mobile phone in the car, in the taxi. And when that was examined, Gardaí downloaded two videos, and the allegation was that those videos showed the men possessing the firearms. And they said that there were more videos researched, shown at downloaded at a later date, and that evidence, the Garda said, showed Mr. O'Driscoll possessing the MAC-10 and two AR-15s, and they said one AR-15 hasn't been found. Mr. Ward is charged with only possessing one AR-15. Mr. O'Driscoll is charged with possessing an AR-15 and a MAC. So there was some evidence. Keith Spencer, who's the barrister for Mr. O'Driscoll and Mr. Ward, did try to get the men out on bail. There was a contested hearing, but the judge decided to keep them in. Now, if you remember the last time they were in court last Friday at Dublin District Court, and Judge Finan made a request of the media not to say what court or where they'd been held. That didn't arise this time, so it was Cloverhill Court, and we said Cloverhill Court in all our copy, and they have been remanded for a fortnight, so we'll see what happens. But as I said, they do have the right to go to a higher court, and that's the High Court in this case.
Interesting. We you know, people might wonder why we're kind of sticking to script on those. That, look, those are matters that are before the courts. And we'd just encourage anyone leaving comments or sharing these videos, just be careful what you say on social media. These matters are before the courts. So, you know, let's keep them in the courts where they are.
I'm not going to go on a rant, but I'm going to go on a rant. Look, people can say what they want. Mm. It's a democracy. But you and I probably have to be more careful than other people. And that, you know, that's probably right. We have a platform. We're journalists. I have noticed, not talking about any specific cases, but I have noticed more, say in the last year, people are making more comments about live cases. And that's grand. I just don't sort of at us, because it puts us in a sort of difficult position, in my mind, right? And if people want to...
Well, we can't...
They're not professional. Yeah, they're not professional journalists. So, you know, it is what it is. I just don't want to, don't involve me, or don't involve you, is what I'm saying, basically. Because
yeah, I suppose I wanted to explain why maybe we can't go a bit further in some things. Look, when things are before the courts, they're before the courts. And not to repeat an old phrase that we often say here, but it is up to judges ultimately as to how they take that. For example, Mr. Justice Tony Hunt, who we're speaking about, took a view in relation to the Ashling Murphy trial about social media, and kind of more or less said what people say on social media, they say, is not going to impact what happens in here in the courtroom. Another judge might feel differently and hold somebody in contempt or whatever. So look, it's just all about being cautious. Just on, before we move on from Corduff, I just want to mention in relation to the investigation into Jason Hennessy, which we can be a bit freer about because there is no one before the courts in relation to that. Obviously, Jason Hennessy Sr. died 2 weeks ago. As we speak, his wake is now happening at his family home there in Sheephill in Corduff, in Blanchardstown. His funeral's happening on Saturday. So again, there'll be another massive security operation surrounding that. That's going to be in Corduff. His funeral details have all been put up publicly. There is expected to be a rather large turnout for that. The investigation into Jason Hennessy Sr., we understand, is progressing. And there are individuals who, at this point in time, are being more looked at as persons of interest, shall we say, rather than... suspects. And we learned recently of a particular individual, a young criminal who's well known to Gardaí, and who was seen watching the funeral of Tristan Sherry, and it would have been considered to be a friend, a close associate of Tristan Sherry. This individual's 25 years old, we think, and we had written a story about him not too long ago, where he was the victim of a shooting himself in Spain. And survived that shooting. And I think I recall a story from you at the time, Mick, where that individual ultimately, when he recovered, refused to cooperate with the investigation into the shooting. Mm-hmm. So that was the end of that. I think the police did say they were still investigating it, but certainly when you have a hostile witness, victim, it's not going to go very far.
No, I mean, look, it happens with regularity. How many times have we heard of people being assaulted, or, you know, even shootings where people don't want to make a complaint? And when that happens, you know, there are various crimes, but you know, the guards are very much inhibited, you know, especially with assaults or something like that, you know. So, yeah, it does happen.
Yeah, so look, there's obviously concerns about the involvement of this individual. They are considered volatile. They are considered to be, you know, well known to Gardaí, as I said, on the radar. Their involvement as yet is being looked at. They are a person of interest. Gardaí have not identified the second gunman in Brown's Steakhouse, and they are looking for that individual. Obviously, we know they have CCTV footage and they are investigating it still. So there are still concerns about that second gunman and about the safety of individuals who the associates of Jason Hennessy might blame and ultimately try to target. So it's still quite hostile, but it has to be said, and I just want to commend, like, obviously to date there has been no incident, and that is testament to the operation on the ground, the presence of An Garda Síochána. You could see it at the funeral, and we've not seen any incident to date. Touch wood, there won't be.
Saturday will be a significant Garda operation, and as we have said before, there are associates of the late Jason Hennessy who are very volatile. So, you know, maybe the fear would be after the funeral, somebody might do something. But I think there will be a significant Garda operation in what they call the DMR West. So there'll be lots of... Was the armed support unit at the funeral or floating around the funeral of Tristan Sherry?
Yes, yeah. Saw them patrolling the area, yeah. It's not like as if they were standing outside the front door with rifles in hand. They kept a discreet presence, but a nonetheless, you know, observable presence. And really it was the uniformed officers who were just patrolling, walking around the perimeter of the church and the general area. That visibility, I think, made a huge difference.
Can we dip our toe into the whole question of Ross Gray and various things like that? So... Without getting pylons, but anyway, that happens. If it does, it does. It's grand. It's only words. I thought, so obviously we know that early this week, the Gardaí were involved in an operation to get 17 asylum seekers into the old Racket Hall or the Racket Hall Hotel in Ross Gray. Locals had been protesting about this since late last week. And the start of this week, the Gardaí, eventually the Public Order Unit, which is what I want to talk about, formed a cordon to get the 17 children and adults into the hotel safely. So I thought that was a very interesting development. And I think, I'm just wondering what you think. Do you think this is showing, you know, the Public Order Unit, they are more robust. They, by their very nature, they're more robust attitude than the normal police. Although they are normal Gardaí, but they just put on their rad gear and they're drawn from all over the division and the region, I'd say. But, you know, it just, for me, it just raised the prospect that in dealing with protests like this, the guards have decided to become more robust. And I wonder, is that a response to the November riots in Dublin?
I think it definitely is a response to what happened, but also it's a very different scenario. I mean, individuals have tried to paint this on social media like some sort of police state activity, and that the guards are getting heavy handed. What I saw, and I think you'll agree with me, is although the Public Order Unit were there, they kept a presence where they were, I think they were quite spaced out. They were standing in a line, and they dealt with issues as they arose. It's not like they went in batons in hand and charged into the crowd and start beating them up. That's not what happened here.
No, and that's true. And there are various things that Gardaí can do. They can do baton charges. They can use their shields formed together to push people back. They didn't have shields. They didn't have their helmets. They didn't have their long batons. And there were rumours or online speculation that they'd used OC spray, which you and I would call pepper spray, and they hadn't. So it basically looked to me that they just there were to form a wall or a barrier between the protesters and the asylum seekers, getting them in. All right, but it was interesting because even a couple of months ago, I think that would have been normal Gardaí in normal uniforms. And because you and I have been at plenty of things where their strategy has always been, you have the Public Order Unit, the riot squad that we would call it, in reserve in their serials around the corner, and they use them as a last resort. But it was the Public Order Unit who escorted the bus in that was carrying these asylum seekers, and they're the ones who formed the cordon. So I just thought that was interesting. And, you know, I know there were protests in Dublin at Leinster House on Wednesday for the reopening of the Dáil. And we know that they had barriers up and there were a Public Order Unit floating around. There were three serials, I believe, floating around, as well as uniformed Gardaí. So I just think we have seen a perceptible change in the policing attitude to protests of, you know, major and minor protests. The people, look, I want to say this. I don't think it's fair to call most of the people in Roscrea who were protesting the far right. I don't think that's fair. There were far right people. I know there were far right people there, but I think most of them, you could not in any way be labelled far right.
Yeah, I struggle with the phrase far right as well, although I know it's a kind of a catch-all term, but there were agitators there for sure. Yeah, people who were there to cause issues alone. It's important to point out on Roscrea, you know, contrary to the reports of brutality and all this, I think only one person was arrested in the entire incident.
Public order.
Yeah, in the entire incident, one person. So it's hardly worth saying in any way that there was some sort of a clampdown on people protesting there. Also, in the footage that I saw, there were scuffles, I think, in, you know, that there were people going in there with children. You know, I mean, it looked like a terrifying ordeal for those individuals. I think everyone has the right to protest, but it's another thing to cause that kind of terror and fear for people who really are just, and I'm not going to get into a political argument with people, but you know, there's a time and a place for certain types of activity. I think protest is fine, but when you're creating that kind of a scuffle and causing fear for children in particular, you know, I just think that's a disgrace.
It was a terrible look. It was really, really bad. Now, people have drawn parallels to Holy Cross in Ardoyne, where I'm my mother and father are actually from Ardoyne. It wasn't, but the children were very frightened. You could see that. I mean, the Ardoyne was a horrible ordeal, and it lasted for a long time, and it was really violent. There were blast bombs and everything. But it was obviously deeply unpleasant for those kids and the mothers. It was terrible. It looked really bad on the video, I thought.
And also, Gardaí have reason to be a little more, not heavy-handed, that's the wrong phrase, because they weren't, but they have reason to bring public order unit in, not just because of the riots, but obviously there have been numerous criminal damage incidents in the last while. Buildings have been set on fire. So there is a real threat there, and that threat has to be met. Incident today now in Lanesborough Convent is the latest one we're speaking about.
Yeah, so that was on Tuesday, and that was the former convent in the centre of Lanesborough, and it had been earmarked to house Ukrainians who were refugees who were fleeing from the war in Ukraine, and so there was an attempt to burn it out. Now, the Gardaí and the firefighters got there very quickly and put it under control, but I know a local stringer down there reported later that the current owner of the site has now abandoned plans for that. But when you think back to it was just over New Year's, the old Shipwright pub in Ringsend in south central Dublin, that was attacked. Then we had, if you remember, the 16th of December, the Ross Lake Hotel in Roscattle in the west of Galway City, or west of Galway, that was gutted by a fire. So the, and then, you know, the Great Southern Hotel in Ross Lara, County Wexford, was attacked. Then in November 23, the Dublin Rats, we know that there was sites housing asylum seekers were assaulted. Even back, there was a vacant premises in Ballybracken, Dublin, in August, was attacked as well. And then one in July in Ballincollig in County Cork. So Lanesborough was not an isolated incident. There have been a string of these in the last year. So, and they're the centre of criminal investigation. So, of course, look, I mean, it's obviously a major concern for Gardaí.
Massively. And speaking about Gardaí, we just want to briefly mention, obviously, the development that you can now enter the force at age 50. And I wonder what people who are currently in the on Garda Síochána think about that. What do you make of it, Mick?
Well, it's terrible. I'm too old to join. look, guards, you see the memes. I see the memes. Guards have a really black sense of humour and a dark sense of humour. So do journalists, by the way. And I think that's part of the reasons why guards and journalists get on so well, because we all see the same crap, shall we say, and to a certain extent, and paramedics and firefighters and prison officers and, you know, HSE staff. You see a lot of stuff and you hear a lot of stuff, and, you know, you have to, we journalists have a terrible sense of humour. We do. We laugh at things that we shouldn't laugh, but that's our
gallows humour.
So, gallows humour. So the guards have been joking about this. They've been sending memes of people in wheelchairs and all that sort of stuff. I personally think it's fine. It's grand, right? You have to do 2 years probation on the front line, on the regular, as it's called. Now, that can mean 1 minute you're helping a granny across the road, the next you're rolling along the floor or along the ground with some fella, some guys who are trying to steal money from a shop or whatever. You don't know what's going to happen, and there has to be a physical element to that.
Yeah.
So, personally, I think I'd be very surprised if anybody at the age of 50 or approaching the age of 50 joins. At the previous age limit was 35, so it's gone from 35 to 50. I think there's obviously an element that they want more experienced people in, and their richness of experience, and people who may have, you mean, there's a couple I know that who were in other police forces around the world, and they've come back, and they might have some experience and go in there. I'd be very surprised if anybody age 50 does join. But look, I think it's all about getting more people with more experience and more experience of the world in.
Well, it also shows you the extent of the recruitment crisis. I mean, at this stage, they can't afford to not open it up to other age categories, can they? Because, I mean, they are in a retention crisis, and the amount of Gardaí that are suspended as well is also an issue. I guess they have no option but to open it up.
No, and like, man, I would follow a lot of English police forces and English police officers over on Twitter, and I have to say, this is not unique to the Garda Síochána, because I see English police officers talking about retention and, you know, getting better paid jobs on the outside and paperwork, everything that guards give out to us about, those police officers do, and you can hear about in the PSNI as well. Like, even for example, because I covered defence, you talk about the naval service, the crisis of staff in there. The British Royal Navy has exactly the same. They're having problems keeping people and retaining them. So maybe it is a question of, you know, expanding the pond of people that they can target, you know. But look, I'll just give you an example. 162 Gardaí resigned last year, and that was the worst since records began. Seven have gone in the first 2 weeks of this year alone. So if that is the case, that'll be something like 186 or something. I've worked it out. So, you know, people are joining, but there are people who are leaving, and that doesn't include people who are retiring on age grounds because they have to go. So look, retention is definitely an issue.
Better pay could be one way. I mean, I see they're increasing the allowance for trainee Gardaí from 184 to 305. So that's something. Still not a lot of money, but I mean, that's something that we have been hearing for some time. That as a trainee Gardaí, you get paid fuck all. So it's not a very attractive job, and that's just the money alone, let alone all the abuse and the hours and everything that you have to suffer. I think anyone who goes into it is to be commended. It's not an easy job.
Not
an easy job.
Definitely. Alan, they have to deal with people like us annoying them.
I'd say we're the least of their concern. Shall we leave it there for today?
Yes. You enjoy your holidays.
Yeah, so I'm off to, not trying to make anybody jealous, but I am on the other side of the world. I'm going to New Zealand to visit some family. So I will be gone for a good couple of weeks. But I'm very much looking forward to it. But we have we've done some work. We've done a couple of pods, which we're going to put out over the coming weeks. And also, you're going to continue to do the Week in Crime with Owen. That'll be great. So we'll still have pods for you, minus me. Some might even be happy about that. So I'll talk to you in February, Mick.
Okay, and I hope the viewership and listening figures don't go up, because that would just be devastating. I can't imagine that.
We shall see.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Okie dokie. Cheers, everybody. Thanks.